Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Well, Dan, we got another guest today. Someone that I'm really interested to hear from, Othamar Gamma. He's joining us. Othamar, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Don. I'm glad to be here. Nice to meet you.
Othamar, tell us about your company what you do and how you help small business.
Yes, we are. Our company is Talentify, and we make recruitment. We put recruitment on autopilot. So our company develops technology that helps business to hire people faster and easier, and without the worrying on managing 12 different types of technologies at once.
Well, and your website?
Yes, our website is talentifyhr.com, which is talentifyhr.com.
Tell us how you got into this business, because that's, I think, a fascinating story.
Yes, I started as a recruiter. I had my own recruitment company, and I grew that company. I ended up having 50 recruiters working with me. We started on the RPO business, which is recruitment process outsourcing. But I always saw how manual and how work task intensive was the recruitment process. And we always thought of ways of how to make our company be able to be more competitive against big recruitment corporations out there. So a few years ago, we started working on technology. I brought some very smart technology people to become our partners. And we made the switch from being a service company to a technology company. And just this year, we released our first product to the mainstream public, our Flux recruitment automation platform. And we were very blessed in having got our first financing round. So we just raised some money from amazing investors and entrepreneurs. And we've been getting a lot of traction. So even though we are able to work with companies different size, from small to large corporations, we have got some large corporations interested in working with our automation process.
Well, Dan, this is a starting point. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. So, do you have a niche that you specialize in?
Yes, we are specializing on hourly workers, so retail sales associates, security guards, restaurant workers. So that's our niche.
So you would not be a competitor of the search engines or employment services that are looking to find professionals for you to fill out your corporation. These are hourly workers. So what kind of companies have come to you?
Yeah, so we have worked with a small farm, like an apple farm company from Massachusetts, that they have one retail store in Boston, Red Apple, and they needed retail sales and a retail manager, to large companies like Saks Fifth Avenue and Lord & Taylor that need to hire thousands and thousands of seasonal workers for their stores. So those are the types of companies we usually work with?
So, before you got into this business of offering this service, how were these companies acquiring the transient or seasonal employees? How did they get them?
Yes, that's where we think we can add a lot of efficiency. So they would sometimes work with staffing companies, multiple staffing companies that they have to manage. So a larger company would have to work with multiple staffing companies, and smaller companies would probably just be posting jobs on Craigslist and just being inundated by hundreds of resumes that they don't really know how to screen. So that's the old ways of doing this. So with our platform, a large company, they don't have to go to recruitment or multiple vendors to find people. The platform reads your jobs from your ATS, from what big companies use to post their jobs, and automatically starts looking for those candidates, screens those candidates, ranks those candidates, and then we automatically send people to be interviewed by the store manager. So they don't even have to read a resume. So our platform will read that resume for them, identify who are the best candidates, and send them directly to the stores to be interviewed by the managers.
Do you charge the employee or the employer a fee?
The employer. So we usually charge the employer per interview that we schedule for them.
And if you have a good hire rate, in other words, you're bringing them people that they can hire, are there any additional bonus payments to you for productivity?
Not right now, but that's a great idea.
I won't charge you for that one. You can have that one for free.
Thank you.
So one of the things that we know, we believe based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics that the unemployment rate is falling.
Yeah.
Yet the same Bureau of Labor Statistics reports about 93 million people out of the workforce. Mm-hmm. So some of us, like myself included, question the unemployment rate, and as a result, there may be a lot more people out there who would be willing to work if there were jobs. We had a revision to third quarter GDP to about 3.3 to 3.4, and now they're saying it might be 3.6 for the year. Goldman is saying that they think it'll be over 4% next year. Trump said yesterday he thinks it could get as high as 6%. So a significant demand for people. Where do you see the greatest need for the kind of people that you have right now?
Yeah, so right now, like what our clients have been struggling the most are for technical and skilled labor, for example, HVAC or AC installer and repairer, people that they're really like losing a lot of time and losing employees just searching for those type of employees right now. So people that have some type of trade skills, those are being very hard to hire, constructions and mechanical, automotive. So those are very hard to hire right now for our clients.
And do they pay well?
We couldn't really say that if they pay well. Like, they are having to pay better now if they want to be competitive, they want to attract those people. But we couldn't say, like, well, they need to get there, and some are getting there in order to remain competitive.
Are there any particular areas of the country that are more short people than others?
Yes, we see like areas like California. It's very hard to find people. Seattle, it's very hard to find people. So the western coast it seems to have a greater shortage of skills. And also, like, we see a lot of difficulties in finding those people on smaller cities, let's say Boise, Idaho, cities like that. I don't know if it's just the population, but like it's been very hard finding people for those smaller cities as well.
So are you saying by inference that the shortage is more west than it is east, north, or south?
Yeah, we see it much more difficult for our clients to get candidates west, out of west, than we see on south and east. Yeah.
So, would it be fair to assume from your analysis that the old Horace Greeley axiom, go west, young man, or young woman now, the greater opportunity if you have some kind of a skill is in the west?
I think it is. There's a lot of opportunities. I wouldn't know because of like the cost of living being high if that those opportunities would be good opportunities. But I do know that what I can say is that companies are struggling to find those people there. But that might be an issue with like pay, other than like. But this is a actual like some areas do have harder time finding people than others. So I think one tip for someone that is looking for a job is to think nationwide, not just on your particular location if you really are struggling to find a job.
Go ahead, Don.
No. I was going to finish your question. I wanted to jump in afterwards and ask a question.
Okay. Just came across my desk that Al Franken resigned today. I'm thinking in terms of opportunity. We have an economy that is very cyclical in nature. And we're now in a cycle where baby boomers are retiring at the rate of about 10,000 a day. And they will do that for probably a number of 15, 16 years. So areas that have increasing demand for people are some professions, teachers, doctors, nurses, high demand, and some areas of the country that are physically growing are actually paying a bounty to get a teacher to come into their community and take a job.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've seen that before, but I'm wondering if there's such a shortage in the West, if we're going to see that happen, that corporations are going to have to start to pay up in order to get people to fill those jobs. Because if they don't fill the jobs, it's going to be have an impact on their ability to grow and prosper as a company.
Exactly. And I have seen that. I have seen like even jobs that we wouldn't think as a job that would be hard to fill. But for, let's say, a large rent-a-car company and wanting to hire like a sales associate for their San Francisco airport, like they were offering $2,000 bounty for someone that just like what you would never expect to see retail and very entry level retail job to get a bounty, like to get like some bounty like that. But yeah, we have seen it. Truck drivers, some companies offer $5,000 just to join in. So that's happening already.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Okay, Don, your turn.
I guess I was going to jump in. I hated to break up such a great stream of questions, but I was curious, what have been some of the one or two major obstacles you had in starting and running your business over the years?
Yes, we had to surpass a lot of obstacles on our journey here. Like, one of them was finding a great technology partner, because I am not the technology partner, and I've tried many times hiring people, outsourcing it to someone. So if someone out there is thinking of starting a technology company, just know you can't start a technology company without having a technology partner with you, like someone that really owns the company with you. So that was my first struggle getting there. And first, it's like, you don't have to be, we were set back a couple of years because we were too perfectionist. Like, we're really trying to get the product right. And then after like delaying releases many months, when we got to the market, then everyone quotes that Mike Tyson quote, like, when you can prepare, but like when all the preparation is done, when you get the first punch on your face. So that's what we seen to us. Like, we prepared a lot, tried to come to the market with the best possible product. And then the market tells us, oh, you have to change a lot. So that was something that I think being agile and iterating and just releasing what we have. I think Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn said, if you are not embarrassed by your first release, you took too long to launch it. So I think that was another, and also financing, like finding investors. I think if you are, you can of course bootstrap, and we did bootstrap for a long time. But when you try to go up market, like as we were working with just small businesses, and then we wanted to work with big enterprises, and so many things that I never thought someone would care about, like having the software in scroll in case you go. And then it now makes a lot of sense. So finding, raising your first round, it's essential to go up market and start working with large corporations. And a lot of things you don't expect, like bureaucratic things that make sense for large corporations that I didn't expect. So this would be like the top three things that we have to learn and overcome over the past few years to get to a point where we are now seeing growth and traction.
I have just one more question, Dan, which is, if you had to give some advice to small businesses, what would be the two or three things you would tell them?
Yes, I think like one of the things that I've learned on our journey here is like to prepare, to always think and prepare and act like you are already a bigger company. So having your finances right, having like a process and policies, right? It seems like when you're starting that we'll never worry about that. But if you want to get somewhere, like want to be bigger than you are right now, I think like prepare and act like you were already the size of the company that you want to. And also sales. I think sales have like hustle, like try to put your product out there. That's the only way like you're going to learn. And always be iterating. I think those are the two things that if we took too long to learn that we should be out there, we should be talking to clients, and we should be acting like a bigger company. And then once we started doing that, things started to happen to us.
Back to you, Dan.
So following up your comments, it sounded as if you were saying that your thinking was too small to start out with, and overly detailed, and you were missing because of the minutia of detail, you were missing the big picture, and you finally realized that you had to act like a big company. Is that fair?
I think it would be two things. One, with our internal governance, yes, we needed to act like a bigger company. And with our product was the opposite. Like, we were trying to be too perfect when for the product, like we needed to be more like to be messier and just get it out there. So those are the two things. For your product, for what you sell, like you have to be a bit embarrassed of it and you have to get it out there. Because if you work on a vacuum, if you work only what you have on your mind, only on what you think the client needs, once you get out there, you're going to realize that you were wrong. everyone and every other CEO that I talk to, everyone says the same thing. Like, once you go to market, that's when you really learn. So be messier and be faster when trying to sell your product, and be better and be more precise and be, have better governance internally. I think if you do the two things, you're going to be able to attract investors. You're going to be acting in a way that they expect their investment to the investment to act, and it will be better for you in the long run.
Yeah. So when did you decide, when did you decide you actually needed Salesforce?
After like I saw myself doing everything, like, and then like I was taking too long to reply to a client. I was, or I was trying to sell and not really doing our financings properly. And so I think was when you see, like, you first, every CEO has to be the believer of its product. So you have to be out there selling. But once you get the first couple clients, if you either go and raise some money, or you either get the money you're getting from those clients, and you get your first sales leader to work with you, because you can't do it by yourself.
And what was your pitch to your investors? What did you say to them to get them to come along with you?
Basically, I said that what we are doing, because our investor is a strategic investor, so it's a large company in our area, and we basically showed them that what we are doing will disrupt their model. So we would be like a future-proofing them if by working with us, because what we do like doesn't require recruiters. So that's how the investor saw that this is an opportunity that they want to be close to.
Super.
Dan, one more question. Unfortunately, we're getting to the end of our time.
Okay, thank you. So if you look back at your experience of building this new business, is there a particular thing that you think you would have changed? Would have a different,
yeah,
create a different outcome for the company?
Yeah, I think like what I would have, like, once we decided we wanted to be a B2B company, sell to big business, I should have looked for investments sooner. Like not, because there's a research out there saying like you can either be a king or rich. So trying to be both, it's very hard. So I think like, especially when you're going to target big corporations, you need to have some money to work with. You need to have like be able to play with the big boys. You're gonna be prepared for. So I would go and do it sooner than I've done.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
We've
you
been
so
talking.
Much.
Othamar, tell us again your website and how people can reach you.
Yes, our website is talentifyhr.com. That is talentifyhr.com. And you can reach me there or look me up on LinkedIn, Othamar Gama.
Link to your website will be on www.recalculating.biz tonight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Dan, Don. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. Did you know that a candle can be an energy saver for home and office? An old-fashioned candle can be a new-fashioned energy saver, and at the same time provide a warm glow to any home office. Adding a candle seems like a silly thing to do, but it can help check for drafts. You can use the candle to test if new windows are needed. Here's how. First, take a roll of blue painter's tape and tear off pieces and put them on your left arm. Pass the candle around the opening and mark the spots around each window and door where the candle flame flickers. When you have finished your test, step back and see if you have tape around all of the window or only one side. The more tape you have on the window, the more money you will save by replacing those windows and doors. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your Small Business Tip of the Day.
Just about any company today, large or small, is very concerned about health care insurance, paying it, developing ways of improving it for their employees. Here to talk about it is ADP's Ellen Feeney. Ellen, welcome to the program. But tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what ADP is doing to help companies handle the burden of health care insurance for their employees. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Don, and thank you for having me today. I work at ADP in our global compliance group in our corporate headquarters in Roseland, New Jersey, and I focus on emerging compliance issues for ADP, and for the past couple of years, I've been mostly focused on healthcare reform and how it affects employers of all sizes.
Dan, I'm going to let you take this one because I know it's of a particular interest of yours.
Yes, thank you so much. I apologize. Ellen, welcome to the program. I got to believe that given the just in the number of administrative changes under Obamacare, is your hair pretty much gone?
I think you can definitely tell whether people, if they pull their hair out, if they're stress eaters, whatever their vice is, you know, following the Affordable Care Act has definitely been a wild ride the past couple of years.
And now we have President Trump, whose party failed at least twice to replace and repeal Obamacare, is repealing it now without congressional approval through the use of executive order. And the news I saw over the weekend is that he's talking about the possibility of using executive order to get away with it, get rid of the mandate. And so more challenges for you and for companies trying to figure out what in the heck is going on.
It definitely has been a full-time job just to, you know, track all the activity that's going on related to the Affordable Care Act. You know, you mentioned the individual mandate, that there's been a lot of activity recently, you know, as part of tax reform discussions. You know, since repeal and replace or repeal and partial replace of the Affordable Care Act has failed, you know, there is this shift to either try to repeal the individual mandate through tax reform, or then, you know, also we're hearing that, you know, the Trump administration might try to do it through executive order, but, you know, we haven't seen anything issued yet.
So in your job, it must be the community. You could literally have a situation in your job, and probably have had it more than once, where day one you send out a communication to your clients, and 2 days later you got a different interpretation or different rules, and you have to go back and rescind that. I got to believe if you're pulling your hair out, your customers, their head must be spinning with trying to figure out what the heck to do.
Right. I think what, you know, we try to do at ADP is to be a comforting voice, some calm in the storm. You know, generally, we don't talk publicly about pending legislation or what the administration could do because of the nature of our services and our diverse client base that covers the entire political spectrum. You know, by nature, ADP itself is not political, right? Because we have clients who are Republicans, Democrats, you know, independents, libertarians, like you name it. But we found with, you know, the Affordable Care Act that we really needed to be out there, you know, talking about post-election possibilities, you know, after then-candidate Trump was elected. And then also, you know, just as there's different developments, you know, to try to keep clients and really the marketplace informed about, you know, what could happen. You know, also with the understanding that the Affordable Care Act is still the law. You know, it hasn't changed, so employers still need to comply with that.
Now, you don't, or I shouldn't say this, do you sell to your clients insurance products?
ADP does have an insurance services part of the group, but the most of our services are related to human capital management. So what employers need to do to comply with the Affordable Care Act, because it involves a variety of data from different systems, whether it's payroll, benefits, HR, leave of absence. So that's, primarily the space we play in.
So do you help your business customers evaluate their existing insurance plans and make recommendations of what they should do to change?
I think that would be, we have a insurance services part of ADP, and they would partner with brokers and make those sorts of recommendations to clients. I'm primarily focused on employer services, what employers need to do to comply with the law, as an employer, not as a plan sponsor.
So what are you saying to your customers about further reform of healthcare in the United States?
So right now we're, focused on keeping customers and the marketplace updated with, what's going on, whether it's Congress acting or, the administration through executive orders. The last executive order we saw related to health care reform, was signed by President Trump on October 12th. He signed this executive order aimed at promoting healthcare choice and competition. And so we'll provide, either clients who use our ACA services, or we issue alerts called Ion Washington, which basically provide an overview of what's going on, along with a recommendation to employers, about what they need to be doing to comply.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in here with a question. I'm a small business owner, and we'll say over 50 employees. What is the law today? Is it the law that was passed? I think there's a lot of confusion. I know I was at a dinner on Sunday with some business owners that were totally confused as to whether the law, the Obamacare, was still in effect, and whether there were any changes at all in all this flurry of excitement. Can you answer that question?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, you know, the Affordable Care Act is still in effect. You know, nothing has changed in terms of, you know, what employers need it to do starting, you know, back in 2015 when a lot of the employer, you know, mandate provisions came into effect. There's so much activity, so it does cause a lot of confusion. The other thing that's, you know, small employers should be mindful of is that an executive order was recently issued, and as part of that, the administration is promoting association health plans, that they want to broaden the ability of small employers to purchase association health plans. So nothing has happened there yet, but it's just something to be mindful of because the administration, you know, basically has directed the different agencies, you know, including the Department of Labor, within 60 days to consider proposing rules or revising guidance to permit more employers, you know, small businesses to participate in association health plans.
What are association health plans?
So an association health plan is basically where you could have employers in the same line of business anywhere in the country, you know, being able to join together to offer health care coverage to their employees. And, you know, any employers within a single state or multi-state metropolitan area would be able to join together to offer health care coverage to their employees.
Well, when you say being in the same state or being being like dry cleaners together or something like that, I'm confused by it, and I'm really glad you're here today. But what do you mean by association? By as I say, dry cleaning, that type of thing, or by state? How is it going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, if there's a National Association of Dry Cleaners, it would enable them to, you know, get together and to basically, you know, form an association health plan. You know, like so much that's being proposed, though, we don't have all the details. And so what the executive order basically did, you know, back on October 12th, was direct the Department of Labor to, you know, look at this and to propose, you know, some rules or issuing some guidance that would permit employers, you know, to participate in association health plans. So, you know, we're waiting to get the details filled in, but I think this is an area that, you know, would be of particular interest to a lot of small employers.
Well, back to you, Dan. That's something we learned today.
Yeah, let me follow that line of questioning from Don. This association health plans, there are a number of different kinds of group plans. There's a Christian ministry group plan where you can join their association and you pay X amount of dollars, and the association picks up the balance of whatever the cost of the healthcare is. And from what I've been reading, it's growing very rapidly. Some companies, as you pointed out, in certain kinds of businesses that are together, are in fact adding, creating a master group to get a better price for each of the employers. So the group business, as by and large, has been, as Don's pointed out, in many cases it's done in particular states or with one singular employer across many states. It now appears that the administration, at least to me, is trying to find ways to put lots of people together to form a group. Is that your understanding too?
Yes. The goal of the executive order is to let small businesses, you know, gain access to the same level of flexibility that large groups already have, and to do this by joining together with other small businesses as part of an association.
We both do a lot of radio and television across the country, and recently we were on a program where an individual was saying, well, in reality, the number of people really subsidized by Obamacare is less than 6 million people. That Obamacare, quote, isn't as expensive as it is being purported to be because there's just a few million people on it. But the thing that I disagreed with what the person was saying is that the government is paying this subsidy. So if the insurance company wants to raise the premiums, the individual is going to pay some or maybe none, and the insurance company is going to pass it on to somebody. But in the private sector, because of the regulations, it's driving up the costs. And we've heard about some of these plans that are going up 20, 30, 40, 50% in a year. Do you see that slowing down at all?
No, I mean, it definitely looks like, you know, it's still something that hasn't been solved, you know, by the Affordable Care Act. It's moved the needle a little bit in terms of individuals who are covered, because of the individual mandate. It hasn't moved the needle at all in terms of individuals who receive their coverage under employer-sponsored plans. That number has pretty much stayed the same. I think you've seen the cost curve, you know, in terms of the amount people pay for premiums. It's slowed down a little bit, but it still is, you know, continues to rise, and the cost of health coverage in prescription drug coverage is something that hasn't, you know, really been solved for.
When we started down this path of Obamacare, the American people were told by the administration that 47 million people didn't have health insurance. We are 9 years into the program, and the last report I saw was somewhere in the neighborhood of depending upon how you count, 15 to 17 million people. So there's 23 million people in 9 years, who still haven't gotten health insurance. What should we be doing about the fact that still a greater number of people, the number of people has come down, but we still have a huge number of people with no health insurance? How do we solve that issue?
It's a great question, and it's definitely, I think, one of the most complex issues, you know, facing the country, you know, today. There's different mechanisms under the Affordable Care Act and, you know, and some of the legislation we've seen proposed, since President Trump was inaugurated that try to address that. One way is encouraging states to innovate and to apply for waivers from Affordable Care Act requirements to allow them some latitude to try to solve, you know, the very issue you're talking about. But so far, I haven't really seen any, comprehensive legislation or even, you know, like policy ideas that, you know, seem to address us.
Do you know from your relationship with your corporate customers, what's been their satisfaction with the Affordable Care Act?
Most employers want to do the right thing. And so most employers are going to, you know, follow what the law is. I think most employers have found that a lot of the Affordable Care Act requirements have been very burdensome, you know, just in terms of needing to calculate hours of service, calculate affordability, do additional reporting. There were a host of new requirements that are still in effect under the Affordable Care Act, and most employers, when we survey them, it definitely, continue to, identify it as something that's burdensome.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
How does ADP ease that burden?
So, ADP offers services to our clients, including, allowing a client to outsource a lot of that burden. So we'll handle everything from calculating hours of service, affordability, handling marketplace notices, depending on the services a client has, as well as the, required IRS, reporting and furnishing forms to employees.
To me, it seems to me that after 8 years of Obamacare, we're all sitting around here still facing the same problems, and especially for small business, it seems that we don't have real answers for them as of yet. Am I right about that, Ellen?
I would agree with that. I mean, I think there's a lot of, it certainly got a lot of attention during the, presidential campaign. A lot of, current members of Congress, ran on a repeal and replace platform. Now I think it's, the president himself said it's complicated. And so we've seen different legislative proposals that have, almost passed. It's been very close in terms of the number of votes in the Senate. And so, after tax reform, I think you'll see a shift back to, they're going to keep trying to address, this issue that we're talking about.
Here in New Jersey, the average individual premium has gone up to over $1,000. It's a real shame. It seems, and for employers, it seems to have also gone through the roof. What have you seen in terms of employer insurance plans in terms of cost?
There's this definite trend of employers, shifting the costs to employees, through consumerism, meaning, whether through health reimbursement arrangements or health savings accounts. You've seen a lot of employers shift to high deductible health plans to enable, employees to have more of a choice in, the exact type of coverage they want to choose. So I think you'll continue to see those, trends continue as employers, try to provide, benefits to their employees, but also try to solve for the, cost issue.
back to you, Dan. I'm sorry to jump in, but she's such a knowledgeable person. We're talking with Ellen Feeney. She's from ADP, and she's really giving us some lessons in healthcare. Thank you.
Right. So let me go back to the political environment. I would assume that that along with healthcare, corporations are very keenly interested in the possible tax changes in the tax law for both corporations and individuals. But there seems to be more and more skewing with the what can be done that now some people are suggesting we will not get a tax reform bill this year and don't know when. What does that do to the psyche of the business people if we don't get a tax bill?
The uncertainty, I think, is what hurts a lot of businesses and, affects the psyche. I think employers just really want to know what they need to do to comply. They want to know what tax rates they'll be facing. And so hopefully, in the upcoming weeks after Thanksgiving, we'll have more certainty as the tax bill continues to go through the process. We've seen the House version of the bill. There's a Senate version of the bill. It's going to have to go through the process. There will be compromises made. But I think, anything that could alleviate some of the uncertainty, whether it's you're talking about tax reform or the Affordable Care Act, I think employers just really want to know what, they're faced with. And then they can respond and, carry on and focus on their businesses.
So in my last question, do you think that it is the uncertainty is affecting the focus of the management of companies on running their businesses?
Businesses, it's going to vary from business to business. I think most businesses are pretty focused on what they need to do, their strategy. It's definitely a distraction, the legislative and regulatory uncertainty. But it's something that we've seen, anytime there's a change in administration, anytime there's a shift in the players in Congress, this is something that, businesses just need to deal with as part of their ordinary course of business. But I think everybody welcomes some certainty and, it definitely makes it easier the more certainty there is.
No question. We've been talking to Ellen Feeney about taxes, insurance, and the government and their services to their corporate clients. Been very informative, and I thank you for spending some time with us today. And I'll throw it back to Don.
Well, no, I echo it. Ellen, people want to know more about you and your company and your department. How do they do it?
People can reach out on ADP.com. We have information there about how to contact ADP. We also have information about healthcare reform, our different services. We also have just some great legislative and regulatory updates that people can subscribe to our Ion Washington publication. They don't need to be a client. But we're definitely out there trying to make sure that, people understand even this time of uncertainty, there's information to be had and to stay the course. And, we're there to help people comply.
Really, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are very well, not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to be able to, seem to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things, and we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte. And they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse in the backyard. And they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers. And their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles. And they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes. And the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected. And the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door, and they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory, so they take his name and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 10 to 12, 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of grandma and grandpa so the generations can know who these people were. And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's and dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads, but the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up, and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz, and you can pick up this show and past shows to expand your knowledge as becoming more successful entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guest?
I thought they were terrific. We had great diversity. We had some really good ideas on small business and what they can do with credit and how they can save money with the gentleman from Spent. So I think there was a lot of good stuff. Again, continuing the idea that we are on the air to try and help small businesses grow their businesses and start them. And again, we had content today that dealt with both. And as in the past, if you didn't get all of this show, you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and look at past shows and expand your education, how you can be better at what you're doing in a small business.
Agreed. Great show, Dan.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.